What's up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 23 of the Jungle Podcast.
Yes, sir.
I'm Carter.
23 on my back. My name is Matthew. Let's get it.
It's the Jordan episode.
Jeez. And
we're gonna talk ball. But really quick, before. So I know you, I don't know about Steven, but he's not here. I know you listen to lo-fi hip-hop beats to sleep slash study too.
Just like in general, the genre of lo-fi? Yeah.
But have you heard of, so there's this artist, Avocuddle, who does like lo-fi remixes of like popular songs.
So I don't think so, actually.
He's done like Mood by 24K Golden, Bad Romance, Timmy Turner, All Time Low, Fly Me to the Moon. Bro, I'm telling you, like you're just listening to it like on a playlist or whatever. You hear it, and you're like, oh, okay, I know this song. And then, oh man, next time you listen to lo-fi, listen to the Avocuddle. And anybody listening,
how do you spell it?
It's just A-V-O and then C-U-D-D-L-E.
A-V-O. Oh, okay. So like, okay, I get it.
Like avocado, Avocuddle. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I understand.
Anyways.
Ball. Not bad.
Big trade happened. Ball. Big game happened.
God damn.
James Harden goes to the Nets.
I think what's scary to me is that even though they have that big three where literally everyone's an all-star level to MVP caliber like player, is that like people still think the Lakers are favored to win the chip. And I'm like, that just, wow.
Yeah.
And like, I can see why, you know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. It's not like hard. Like the misconception is that Harden and KD do not play defense, which is like, it's because they're just so, they're so offensively gifted. But like,
yeah,
if you watch the games, you can see they're not bad defensively. Like they're fine. It's not like they're like tanking defense. But I think the biggest thing is that people think that the Lakers and like other teams have way more depth and like sharing the ball. I don't know. It's going to be interesting
to see.
They
have a lot of depth. And as much as I don't like Harden, last year he showed defensively he improved a lot, and he's like, he can actually guard people. Again, I'm still not a fan of his play style, and I think if you have Kyrie on that team, like if Kyrie remains on that team, it just won't work out, because you have three guys.
I have a feeling
super ball. Well, I mean, KD's not like necessarily super ball dominant, just because he's so efficient. He doesn't necessarily need a lot of touches.
That's what's terrifying about KD.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah.
This man can give you 40 points on less than 20 shots somehow. It's like,
no,
okay,
yeah. What's crazy is he can give you 42 points and no one says anything about it because it's just casual. It's like, yeah, that's KD. It's whatever.
Yeah. I think it was Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes said that he would, if he was a GM, obviously, like it's just like his opinion, basically. He would said that he would trade Kyrie for some more depth on the team and just build around Harden and KD, which like I think any NBA fan would do, just because of like how negative of a light Kyrie gets, especially like recently too. Like it's just like never ending apparently for this guy. And don't get me wrong, like Kyrie's a very talented player, but I feel like everywhere he goes, there seems to be some sort of drama, whether that be like painted by the media or actual issues is like up for debate. But I don't know. I feel like it's not going to work with the three just because, yeah, like Harden and KD Harden and Kyrie do need the ball in their hands way more than like your average player.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it happens. But what a fucking trade. Like, that's crazy. I didn't think they were going to pull that off. I like 100% Harden to the 76ers or something. For like Ben Simmons.
One thing I was surprised about is I feel like they could have. Like, I know they want the big three together, and they were definitely, like, I'm sure KD and Kyrie were definitely pushing for it. But I feel like a more logical, like, trade is you trade Kyrie for James Harden, and then that way you don't give up as many picks, and you keep Caris LeVert, who, like...
Caris LeVert should have stayed on the team.
Yeah, if he's coming
off
the
bench. Don't get me wrong, Dinwiddie's nice. Don't get me wrong. Like, Dinwiddie's nice, but, like, Caris LeVert was going hard, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and, like, I feel like he's a dude that could... He could probably share the ball. Then a lot, but he could share the ball a lot better than Kyrie. And you still have Landry Shamet, Tyler Johnson. Like, you've got a lot of point guards and like shooting guard to fill the position. And the thing is, like, Caris LeVert can play like the 2-3, so it's like you have positions. So I don't know. We'll see how it works out, though.
I feel like if they traded Kyrie out, then Harden would have been the point.
Yeah. No, you probably still have Harden at the 2. Because you have so many, like, guards.
Oh, they have, yeah. Yeah. Well, who do they have at the two right now, technically? Harden, Kyrie's a point. They have KD small forward?
Or KD at power forward? I mean, he played 3-4, but on that team, he probably plays, like, the four.
Because they're often. Starting They're starting with, who's their center? It's escaping my mind.
Right? Or is he?
DeAndre
is he,
Jordan, and then they Allen have Jeff Green. Jared Allen got traded.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
I think it's Jeff Green coming off the bench. Crazy.
Yeah, probably.
And then
the 4-5 is it? Weird that he plays the 5. It's weird that Jeff Green, because Jeff Green is like normally a 3 spot kind of guy, but I mean, I guess with small, like this whole small ball era, it's sort of weird to see dudes who are like 6'7", 6'8", normally played 3 spot, now playing center.
Oh yeah, that Joe Harris. I was like, who the hell is the last player on the team that I can't?
Yeah, well, he plays like the 2-3.
But I feel like once everyone's just going to get shifted down once Kyrie comes back.
Yeah.
100%.
It's definitely, I think, like, on paper, it's like, it's the fucking Warriors dynasty. It's like, they have so much firepower, they just don't lose. But at the same time, yeah, they're, like, so top-heavy. So,
I guess we'll see. But I feel like what made the Warriors dynasty work is that KD's efficient, mm-hmm. Steph's off-ball movement, and, like, his whole off-ball, like...
Their whole system's amazing.
Yeah, their whole system just works so well. Whereas this one, it's like, yes, you have a lot of talent, but it's like, obviously two of them can fit together, no problem, whether it be KD and Kyrie or KD and Harden. But we still haven't seen all three of them on the court. Like, maybe it's going to work, maybe it won't. So.
Yeah. Did you hear Stephen A. said Kyrie should just retire?
Yeah, I didn't watch the episode of First Take, man. But I saw the headline, and I was like, what the hell, like, Kyrie's retiring?
He kind of made a solid point. Like, if he's not really, like, there to play, he's just sort of there to, like, get money and fuss, and, like, I understand he's, you know, doing stuff for social issues, which is great, but it's like, you're not doing your job, and, like, being paid to do it, but you're not doing it.
Yeah.
And it seems like he doesn't want to play, which is weird.
Apparently he's excited to play. I think it was the Nets assistant head coach, whoever the hell is behind. Someone came out. No, it's Steve Nash, like, the head coach. Nash, yeah, behind Steve Nash. Sorry. I can't remember who exactly, remember. Or maybe it was a GM or something, but I definitely saw a post. And apparently Kyrie's excited to come back and play, which is like a complete 180 from what the hell he's been doing for the past week. So
yeah. Well, what's crazy is I can't remember if this is what they said on First Take as well, but he's actually like close to voiding his contract because he's missed so many games with injuries, yeah. With like sitting out and stuff, dude. Like, what are you doing?
How are you gonna crazy your contract? Too is I think it was Mac, actually I think it was First Take as well when they were talking about it.
Yeah,
you might have watched this part of the episode, but I think it was Max Kellerman. Max Kellerman was like, this guy has literally played in as many games as he's missed or something like that.
He's, I'm
like,
that's now, ridiculous. Yeah, he's like, now played less, or is now, he's now or, missed more yeah, games than he's played.
Missed
yeah.
more games than he's played.
Yeah.
That's as a insane. Net, which is like, it makes sense because like he did have the injury towards the end of last year. Which is like, I get that. But now like you're fully healthy. It's like, yeah. I feel like you should be playing.
It's,
I don't know.
It's not like he was in like a John Wall situation, which was also sort of weird. But like he had a pretty bad injury rate to like, you know, have a long recovery period, but like mm-hmm. Kyrie has not, like, he wasn't that injured.
Is the contract void? Like, is it on all contracts, or is that like on a contract to contract basis? Like, is that a league thing, or is that like?
I think it's imagine
Kevin Durant was not playing for a whole season, obviously, but that's because he was injured. So it's like if he didn't play this season because he got re-injured, or like for example, Clay.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that like that wouldn't count as a voided contract reason?
I
right?
would. Yeah, yeah, I would imagine like because of injury they probably have like some stipulation in the contract saying like yeah okay
yeah,
if you
like, if he gets injured
play,
yeah.
yeah
okay I figured I just wasn't sure if that was like
yeah
a thing that each contract they probably have it like these contracts probably are so long and like there's so much to them because there's so many little things that can come into take
yeah
come in as a factor
but. Well and like as an organization it's like if somebody's injured and they can't play and like that's why they weren't playing like you don't want to just get rid of them because they were yeah. injured, especially if you have
especially
a strong
if it's like a
feeling.
Kevin Durant or a fucking
Clay or like Kyrie. Yeah, like if you know they can come back and still be really effective, it's like why would you get, especially voiding a contract.
Can you imagine voiding like a Kevin Durant contract because he didn't play for a year?
Yeah.
You know how stupid you'd
like How does that work? Are they free agent now? Or like restricted free agent?
I think so.
Because,
well, if they void the contract, then it's like kind of like, yeah, they're literally just a free agent. It'd be like,
you just like don't have rights to that like player.
Yeah, like you just let go of the player essentially.
Yeah, it's like you definitely don't want that to happen because now you can't trade them. I mean, again, I don't know if that's how it works, but like if that is how it works, like that's the worst case scenario. But man, the first few games, I'd say like the first 4 or 5 games of the NBA, weird to see. Like there's teams that shouldn't be doing this well that are doing really well. And like the Bucks started out really terrible. The Raptors are 4-8. They started out like
hurts.
Dude, they started
the Heat.
Out so
the Heat are
bad.
4-7 too. And I'm like, you guys like I get them because they it's like they literally just came off a finals appearance. And like obviously they're not in the same degree as like the Lakers, who it's like, yes, they just came off the same finals appearance and won, but like you know, like it's not like they're a joke of a team anyway. Not to say that like the Heat are, but I wouldn't expect 4-7 for sure. Like I was expecting at least a 50 record or above 500.
Yeah.
With them. At least a start. Like obviously all can change. Like how many games are we in now? Like probably like close 11, to 10, 12. 15.
Yeah. What's crazy was the Suns start to the season. I think it started out like 4-0 or something. Which you love to see because they have a solid squad now. Which
I was looking and I was like, man, of all my favorite players of all times, a lot of them are like points or shooting guards and like at least 3 of them have now played for the Suns, so maybe that should be my team.
Probably.
Like Steve Nash up there, Chris Paul up there, Devin Booker up there. You know, like they're all here. I always thought Charles Barkley was nice. You know, like
yeah,
my guy was nice still.
He was disgusting. What I like to see, and I don't think it's gonna last, but the Knicks actually playing not terribly.
They're just out. They're sitting one game out of the 8th seed though, or they're tied for it right now.
Yeah, they're 6-8, which. The Hornets are in the 8th seed, and honestly, like that's my dark horse pick to watch this year, because I think if they can click, like they're actually a solid, like a decent squad this year.
Wow, they lost their last, so they were 6-5 earlier, and they just lost their last 3.
Yeah, like with LaMelo, Gordon Hayward, Devontae Graham, dude.
See the other game, squad. The last game they won, I think it was when Gordon Hayward dropped like 42 or something.
Yeah,
and I'm like, man, like. When did this happen? Like, obviously it's like not all the games are nationally televised, but like that flew under the radar for me. I saw it and I was like, whoa, he dropped 42. Like,
yeah,
I guess he was worth that money for now, at least.
I feel like Gordon Hayward was one of those players that like, after he got injured, a lot of people were like, oh, he's never going to come back the same. And I feel like he definitely, it seemed like that because he was on Boston, which they literally have like a starting they had a starting five that basically could have all been all stars, like Kemba, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward. Like that's 4 people that could literally be an all star.
It's crazy that team was so talented and like, not to say they underachieved, but they definitely didn't achieve like obviously the role of it or the goal of a championship. I definitely thought they were going to make it a little farther.
And what's crazy is they got beat by Miami last year, and for sure. Like on a, if you look at like the matchups, the only place I think like the Celtics would lose is in the center position because of oh my god, I'm blanking.
Daniel Tice versus Adebayo.
Yeah, Bam Adebayo. So like obviously Bam is just like way better than Daniel Tice, but Daniel Tice like defensively is super strong.
Do they have Tatum playing in the 3 or the 4?
I think he was like 3. I think he was normally at the 4.
Because like,
but they kind of switched it up in the middle season. But I'm pretty sure they tip if they had sort of their like.
So let's say Kemba at the 1, probably Brown
Jaylen
at the 2,
Brown, Gordon Hayward typically at the 3 if they're all playing on the floor.
Well,
at the same
last
time.
Year at least, and it was but Marcus Smart was off the bench or was he playing as a starting?
Well, I think for a little while he was at the 1 because Kemba was sort of like off injuries and
No, that makes sense.
Which sucks to see, man, because Kemba needs to win a chip, man. He fucking dealt with so many years in Charlotte of doing nothing, being the only
man. What's crazy to me is that I feel like he got out of Charlotte and he made it farther playoff-wise, but I feel like he's really just taken such a backseat. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. The last time I remember watching Kemba like on a consistent basis was probably like when he was still in Charlotte and he was torching kids up. Like, it's like 40 points, 30 plus points all the time. And it's like now, obviously, he's sharing the ball with like Jason Tatum,
yeah,
Jaylen Brown. You know, like he's sharing with like good players for one. So it's like
any decent
I expected him. I expected him to at least keep on dropping like at least 20 to 25 points.
Well, I think that he not on like a consistent like still 20. They had like four people average 20 last year.
That's terrifying.
Which like I thought for sure they were the favorite out of the East.
Over the Bucks, really?
As much as I like Giannis and Chris Middleton, yeah, I like they just were looking so strong.
I feel like the Drew Holiday trade. I feel like that's gonna really help them out.
This year?
Obviously they're still first in the conference, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. They're still first in conference, but it's like they're still a scary team. Like I think people are just like, man, they got bounced out second round or whatever against the Heat. But it's like don't sleep on them now. Like they just picked up Drew Holiday of all people, and like he's not like some random role player. He's a good player.
Currently, like that is a bit of an upgrade from Bledsoe. If you're comparing them, I would say it's a big upgrade. 2-3 years ago, I mean defensively they're both really good, but if you're comparing 2-3 years ago, I think Eric Bledsoe is still sort of a little bit better. I think Drew Holiday now is the edge because he's good offensively and he's a defensive monster.
Oh, that's what my point was going to be is that like you can say they're pretty neck and neck in defense, and like I won't object too much there. Like I would personally take Drew Holiday over him, but offensively I feel like Drew Holiday's miles ahead of Eric Bledsoe, at least like
now.
I feel like he's also a good third option though.
Yeah,
for sure.
Who is it? Hold on. I'm blanking on who Robert Covington's playing for right now. Oh yeah,
Roko?
Trailblazers. This is a team that I really want. Like I was watching them last year, obviously, because I'm just a huge fan of Melo. As much as people hate me for that. But
people hate you for being a Melo fan?
Yeah, people don't like Carmelo Anthony.
Tragic.
Because they seem very selfish. Anyways, I kinda understand, but I think he's sick. But their squad this year is crazy. Derek Jones Jr., Robert Covington, Enes Kanter, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Carmelo Anthony, Gary Trent Jr., who goes off at crazy times. Rodney Hood's back. They have Anthony Simons, he's still young. He's not maybe not living up to the potential hype that he had. Harry Giles, and then Yusuf Nurkic is back. Zach Collins is back. So they're a solid squad, and they're 8-5 right now. So, dude, I want to see them go deep in the playoffs this year.
I feel like, okay, here's a thing I actually want to ask you just to see what you think. Do you think that the East is still the weak Eastern Conference versus the tough Western Conference, at least as of this year?
Yeah, I mean, like I think I like more teams in the East, which is crazy to say. But I still think, yeah, like because you look at the top eight in the East, and like only on an average year, like six of them are like legit squads. And then from like 7-8 and then below, it's usually like a negative win rate.
Mm-hmm.
So typically,
that's funny because that's the case right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then you look at the West.
7-8 are all negative.
Yeah. And then you look at the West and down to the 11th spot, they're even. And then everybody like, you know what I'm saying?
Honestly, I feel like I agree. I think it's still like, I would still say the West is a little harder. Obviously, it's closer than it has been in like a very long time because so many players from the West moved out East. Like KD moved there, Harden obviously moved out there. Some of the superstars are now like now that LeBron's gone out of the East, I feel like a lot of superstars are really coming to their own. Whether it be on the Celtics, whether it be like Trae Young coming up there now, things are looking up for the East, which is crazy.
We have the boy; he's back. He's in here.
Ooh. What's up? My apologies. I was eating dinner.
All good. We have
he's
or Matt
fed.
Has a
he's
Matt,
fed.
Matt has a topic now that it's all three of us. Matt said he's got some topics for you. So.
Oh yes, I do have one.
So we'll switch it up right now.
Yeah, we'll switch it. We'll take off the basketball talk. You know, something different. How do you feel about remasters and remakes, etc., and deluxe? Well, not necessarily deluxe version. Remasters or remakes. and like their impact on like my thought process was games, but you could really apply it to any form of media, whether it be like a movie getting remastered or, you know, like whatever. And I feel like I wanted to ask you this specifically just because you have various knowledge, not only in film, but obviously in video games, where it's like, obviously there's the graphical improvements and whatnot, but like, how much do you think a remaster really adds to the enjoyment of a game?
Yeah, I mean, well, because there's a few different ways that you can do remasters. Like, you have something like, very recently, like Demon's Souls was remastered. And that was a game that, on its original system, like on the PS3, was well reviewed, but had issues. Like, it had like performance issues and stuff. So, in a case like that, I think it makes a lot of sense because, yeah, not only are you bringing it up to modern standards in terms of like the graphical fidelity, but you're also making a version that is more accessible to people in the sense that you don't need to pull out like a 14-year-old system to play it. It runs better. I don't know what the old controls were like, but I know a lot of remasters will like fine-tune controls and stuff, so... A remaster like that is kind of just taking the original and just bringing it to like a modern standard kind of thing. Yeah, like you're not touching the original vision of the game. You're not changing the story or anything. It's just, this game was great. We're going to just make it the best version of what was made. Yeah, and I don't see anything wrong with that.
It's like quality of life changes. It's like all the little things that were annoying, they just like bring it up.
Yeah, it's
so
like
let's say the original Halo Combat Evolved versus the remaster, which is like, don't get me wrong, obviously I like the graphical upgrade, but I don't know if this is just an unpopular opinion, but I personally prefer playing it in the old style of graphics. Like,
sure, and they give you that option.
Yeah, which is great. Like, don't get me wrong, I think that's a really well done remaster. Mm-hmm. I just personally like preferred always playing in old style graphics, just because that's what I'm
sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the thing, is like, that's another example. Like, Demon's Souls was brought completely up to modern standards. Combat Evolved was like improved a bit, but it's still very clearly an older game. But in both cases, you're maintaining the original like version of what the game is, and you're just making it the like a better version of what was already there. You're not changing the vision at all. I think that's only really a good thing because, yeah, like Carl was saying, it makes it more accessible. It's on a more modern system. Maybe the controls are more refined. The graphics are something that look good today.
Speaking of accessibility, I feel like it also gives younger audiences that may not have been able to experience it originally a chance to experience it. So my example being like obviously like Pokemon and stuff. So they re-release, like they usually re-release the generations from before onto the newest system at the time. Which for most of the remakes, I think, are all on the DS, if I'm not mistaken. They're all on the DS.
But it
gives someone a chance to experience, like, Fire Red and Leaf Green, which is the original first generation Pokemon games, but, like, way newer. There's, like, additional stuff added. There's obviously more Pokemon that have been there. So it's, like, kind of 50-50 on if you think it's a good game or not. But it does give, like, that accessibility option for people who have heard so much about, like, the first Pokemon games but never got to experience them. That's a good way to do it too.
Yeah, and then that's another way, like that's for remasters when you have the original vision and you're like, let's expand upon this. That's where I feel like it starts to get a lot more controversial of, okay,
you can get dicier. Yeah,
now you're changing it. Like Final Fantasy VII Remake is probably the most recent big example where, like,
is that out yet?
It came out in April. Yes. It's a timed exclusive on PS4, but that's a game that's, they haven't even said how many parts it's going to be, but the one that came out is just the first part. And they took, I haven't played the original, but my understanding is in the original, this part of the game took about like 5 hours or so, like 5 or 6 hours. They expanded it into like a 40-hour game. Whoa. Just that one part. So it's like, you have greatly changed what the original vision of the game is. Like, it's still the same core foundation, but you've expanded it massively. But most people seem to think that they did it well. However, that can go wrong sometimes if you, like, take that kind of creative license too far. So I think that's an interesting case of Like, there are definitely games that do it right. Resident Evil 2 was another one that was, like, critically acclaimed of, like, yeah, you kept what was good about it originally and just improved upon it.
You know, game does it wrong? Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green.
Really? You think so?
Yeah, I mean, like, as someone who played through it, first of all, so the reason they even made those in the first place wasn't because they thought it was going to sell out, but it was because after generation 2 of Pokemon and into the third generation of Pokemon, there was no backwards compatibility anymore. Like, they literally just severed ties. So anything you did from Gen 1 and 2, you couldn't bring over to Gen 3. Sure. So they remade these in an effort to try and, like, basically do whatever you wanted to do in Gen 1, but have it compatible with Gen 3. And, like, it was out of quote-unquote necessity, like, clearly still a cash grab, but, like, pretty like, necessary, I guess, if you consider yourself, like, an actual Pokemon fan. But the thing is that it's so ridiculously hard to have any sort of compatibility with Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald playing Fire and Leaf Green, because you can't transfer any of your Pokemon until you've completely finished the entire game, including post-game. And there's a bunch of, like, little walls and stuff, and, like, certain things that weren't accessible in Gen 1 that are accessible in Gen 3 that, like, prohibit you from, like, transferring Pokemon over or doing whatever you might have to do. So it's like, yes, the remake was nice because it allowed other people to start playing Gen 1, but no, because the whole point of the remake was to have it accessible for everyone, and, like, you can't even do that until you literally finish through the entire game, which is, like, there's still so many flaws with how Gen 1 is laid out, and it's the whole spiel.
Yeah, honestly, I think games have gotten pretty good at it. Like, I struggle to think of any recent, like, remasters or remakes that were generally considered inferior. Yeah, like, when I think of, like, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, Demon Souls, Final Fantasy, Resident Evil, like, you have a mix there of games that are more or less just the original and brought up to modern standards versus, like, a kind of creative remake of the original where they did expand upon it and change it. But all of those that I just mentioned, regardless of which category they fall into, are generally regarded as good, if not better, than the original. So I feel like games have gotten pretty good with that. I feel like the time where you see, like, remasters or adaptations done just for, like, a quick cash grab at the sacrifice of quality are when you have things adapted from one medium to another. So an animated show that's adapted to live action, like Avatar, or like a game that's adapted to video, or sorry, a video game that's adapted to movies. Don't get me wrong, you have a lot of great adaptations, like something like Assassin's Harry Potter.
Remember Assassin's Creed?
Yeah. It's like, you do have some good adaptations. Apparently the Sonic the Hedgehog movie was decent. I never saw it myself, but a lot of adaptations are just like, look, here's a popular franchise. Let's do it in a different place. And then it often doesn't go well. I feel like video games being adapted into movies are the most infamous example of that, because
has there ever been has there even ever been, like, a good adaptation into a movie from a video game? Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
I think, like, you could say that, like, Sonic and Detective Pikachu were decent. Like, they're not bad. Detective Pikachu, from having seen it, I would say is not a bad movie. I think that was fine. I think that was a good time. Sonic, I haven't seen, but Sonic currently stands as the highest rated adaptation. So I expect it's a similar case of, like, yeah, it's a good enough movie. Outside of that, though,
remember,
like,
outside of
those two movies,
no. That trailer that they dropped, and everyone was like, what the
fuck? So bad. So bad.
For Sonic? Yeah.
Everyone was
monstrosity. Yeah. Absolutely. But they fixed it, and apparently it was decent. But yeah, no, outside of that, like, I mean, they've been adapting games into movies for decades now. And, like, no, none of them are good. Like, you have something like Mortal Kombat, which is iconic.
But I think the reason that those movies,
Mortal Kombat wasn't terrible. Like, it was cheesy.
Cheesy. It's cheesy. Like, it's the most, like, 90s adaptation of a fucking video game to movie that you could possibly think of.
But, like,
and that's what gives it its charms. Like, a cult following. Yeah. Like, it's not necessarily good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, but if you think about it, like, the Mortal Kombat games, especially the early ones, like, they weren't good in terms of like story and like narrative and stuff.
Oh, sure. Like, yeah. They started fleshing out the story a little more once they had the world.
Yeah. But and so like
the first ones were definitely just like, fuck it. Let's see. Like more people. No one was playing Mortal Kombat before with this story.
Yeah. And like the new, was it TV show or movie that's coming out of Mortal Kombat now?
Movie.
Okay. So I'm sure that one will like probably be decent. Again, we'll have to see because like, who knows, they could just go the same route. But didn't a lot of people enjoy The Witcher? I know it's not a movie, but it's a TV series. So
yeah, if you want to talk about TV series? Yeah, it came out in 2019. It's with Henry Cavill. He plays Geralt. Mm. It's a Netflix original. Yeah, that one, I didn't finish it myself. I think I watched like 5 of the 8 episodes. I personally didn't really like it, but it was popular. Like, it was a success. Castlevania, though, is very good. Castlevania is easily the best.
Video game?
It's a short list. Yeah.
It is a video game, but... So, wait, they made a TV series out of Castlevania?
Funny enough, another Netflix original. It's an anime, and it is really good. Because I guess I've not played Castlevania, but my understanding is that the story is very bare bones, and so the show kind of just takes the characters and goes its own direction with it. So it's more or less an original story. Like, it's based on the game, but makes its own story, really. Mm. And it's very good. I think they've done 3 seasons now, and it's like, yeah, it's a short list of
certified
like
fresh.
Good.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's a short list of game to like movie or TV adaptations that are at least decent. So you don't have many to choose from, but on that short list, Castlevania is the best that I've seen, at least.
Word. Switching gears, do you guys have any questions that you wanted to ask the respective other two individuals here?
Go ahead. I've got a question that's sort of related to this, and I think we kind of like talked about it in like a group chat, but what's your opinion, I guess mostly Steven, but Matt, what's your opinion on the 4K remaster of Lord of the Rings?
Ah, yes. Okay.
Are they just porting it over into a 4K version?
So I'm not sure, because I've seen clips of the Lord of the Rings, like just scenes that are in 4K, but they were posted like a couple years ago. So I'm not sure if maybe throughout their remastering process, they just like posted clips to sort of like gain some hype, because obviously the series came out, you know, almost 20 years ago. But when I watch them, at least in some of the scenes, there's some parts where you're like, you know, when you like, you try to like increase quality of something that's already low quality, and it just like there's parts of it that get really grainy and look bad, and it's like you can tell it's very artificially done. That it sort of looked like that. So I don't know if maybe that's like a previous thing, or if it's going to be like completely different in this new release. But
so I do wonder what you saw, because I'm like, you see a lot of people that post videos on YouTube that's like, oh, here's like, you know, some old property in like 4K or whatever, and it is just done like through software of just like, oh yeah, let's just like digitally upscale this. So I do wonder if that's kind of what you saw and not footage of the actual remaster. So the actual film was shot like on physical film.
Yeah.
So they would be able to go back and rescan that film into 4K, so it is actually 4K and not just upscaled. I heard that that's not what they did, that they used the original 2K master and upscaled that. I would expect that, you know, their quality of upscaling, though, would be better than just some random person doing it on YouTube, but I'm not familiar enough with how upscaling is done to know that. But it definitely wasn't just limited to that. They did go back and regrade the film. Like, they like did the color grading over again, because the Blu-ray release, and this is like, if you look at those clips that you're talking about, this is how you would be able to tell if it's the actual release or just someone doing it.
Isn't it like super tinted?
Does it have the new color grade? Yeah, the Blu-ray from 2011 is, and it kind of goes for like, this is the extended edition Blu-ray from 2011. It goes for a much like darker, moodier kind of vibe, that was kind of like, I feel like the thing at the times, like, especially like you saw it a lot in like DC films and stuff, like everything is just gray and blue and washed out. So they've backtracked on that. They haven't made it identical to the original theatrical cut, but it's kind of a middle ground. Like, it looks very, from the parts that I saw, it looks very neutral. It doesn't look like there's like an overwhelming tint one way or the other, which both the original theatrical and Blu-ray extended suffered from in different ways. So it seems like they've gone back, they've recolor graded just to be kind of neutral. And yeah, I mean, it looks like it's the best version of the film that there is. And that's an interesting conversation as well, because a lot of movies do kind of cheap out on these like re-releases where it's just like, oh, just, you know, do the bare minimum of like do digital upscaling and like with something like high dynamic range, like have it mastered to a very low brightness. Like they kind of just, the simple way of saying it is a lot of these re-releases just do the bare minimum to use these newer labels like 4K and HDR and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is sad. It's disappointing. So it's nice to see that with Lord of the Rings, they did at the very least go back and do a passover of the film to change some stuff.
It's been a while since I've seen the Lord of the Rings film, but from last I recall, they didn't even look that bad.
Because they're like playing them back.
Yeah, like I feel like they, from what I remember, like none of them looked like evidently aged. Like obviously it's like an older movie, but like to me, from what I recall, like it seemed completely fine to watch and like nothing's like, wow, that looks hella dated. And I think part of that is because they don't put themselves in an era where it's like clearly this is going to look dated in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the whole world that they've built around themselves, it's not like they're showing technology that would have been like new at the time, but like dated now.
Yeah.
Unless you really, well, like, cause like they purposely go for it. Like they purposely set it in a region where it's like similar to like almost like medieval times in that sense, but not necessarily to the extent that it's like 1500s. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it holds up very well. I just watched those movies for the first time recently. I watched the
Ray extended first edition. Time?
Wow.
I had seen Fellowship, but like kind of just, I think it was on when we were at a party and like, this was like a couple of years ago, not COVID, but yeah, it was on when we were at a party. So I was like kind of watching it, but not really.
And
I
never said the word, we're going to get demonetized now.
But yeah, so this was my first time going through all of them, like sitting down, paying attention kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, they hold up incredibly well. They rely a lot on practical effects and even the CGI, like, you know, it doesn't look modern, but it doesn't look horrendous either. I believe that's actually, I believe they did do a passover of the special effects on the remaster as well. They didn't change any of them, but they just did like a bit of a passover just to make them look a bit more modern. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't actually change what the effects are, but just made them look a bit nicer. But yeah, no, that movie, or sorry, those movies hold up incredibly well, and they're just very good. I watched the extended editions, and so 12 hours later, I am thoroughly impressed with those films.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, very good. Yeah, no, it genuinely is. It's like the fact that all three films just like they tie together, like they're just one giant film. And it's like when you evaluate it like that, of just like a 12-hour experience, I can't think of anything on par with that. Like, I mean, the modern equivalent of something that large scale would be the MCU, but even that is divided into distinct stories with just an overarching connection that like relates the characters and the stories. Nothing like Lord of the Rings, where it's like you could cut that into a single 12-hour edit. Yeah. And I'm sure people have.
If you could fit it all onto one disc kind of thing, which like obviously now you can, but like at the time they were released, they probably would have just released it all in one too, like just like a complete version, which like it's literally just playing the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean that's how the book was written originally. I found out after the book was written as one story, and the publisher was like, "No, you have to break this up."
Yeah.
So the only reason it exists as three books is because it had to. It was originally one story. So,
I think what's crazy about how impressive. there's not a lot of forms of media that have like these made up worlds as fleshed out as Lord of the Rings.
I mean, Tolkien pretty like, much.
There's a lot of like obviously a lot of forms of media where they have their own little worlds, but I feel like it's really fleshed out in Lord of the Rings, like extensively fleshed out to the point where it's like almost like I don't want to say psychotic in a negative way, but like psychotic on how much details there are in little things, like to the extent that there's a language made, like multiple languages made for it, and you know, like there's a lot of stuff. Like it's definitely a huge world, and like I think Harry Potter's pretty fleshed out too, but not to the extent that Lord of the Rings is, at least personally, I would say.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why you probably don't see many big fantasy franchises. Like, you can probably count them on one hand, like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones. Those are like the major ones I can think of. It's because to do fantasy right, it generally needs to be
so believable,
very
and
deep.
Fleshed out. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It needs
so
to
you
have
see
that believability and relatability aspect to it, where it's like, sure, you have all these characters, but it's like how am I supposed to get lost in this like fantasy world if it's not that fleshed out? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
People.
Exactly. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, the thing as well, like looking at both Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings, like they plop you kind of in the middle of a long series of events, like where both of those are just like, oh yeah, here's everything that came before. Like Amazon is now doing a Lord of the Rings series that's set before the movies, but is still not the furthest back that lore is established. Like, I get, correct me if I'm wrong, Carr, you probably know more about this than I do, but I guess it's divided into like three or four ages in Lord of the Rings. Yeah, so the movies are the third age. This television show is the second age. There's still a whole other age that's established and has not been explored at all. And same with Game of Thrones, of like, when you start Game of Thrones, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but like, Game of Thrones starts with like one of the most powerful families in that world being down to its last couple of members. And it's just pure history of when this family used to rule the lands.
Down bad.
And that's an entire prequel series that's now being developed. Like, there's one novel written, there's a second being written, there's a series that is in development. It's like, these worlds are just so deep and rich with lore that, yeah, I mean, it's hard to do fantasy right, and that's why you see it so rarely.
Yeah. I think it's crazy how like influential Tolkien was with like all of his writing. Like, without Tolkien, a lot of the stuff that we have now wouldn't exist, or at least wouldn't be the same. Not nearly.
Yeah, there's so many people that were inspired by the Lord of the Rings movies. I feel like it's not necessarily like it's the direct like they're trying to mimic what he did in that sense, but I feel like so many people were inspired by how he wrote, what he wrote about, you know, like all these different factors that come in to the point where it's like, there's a lot of forms of media, and like there's a lot of people that have made critically acclaimed work that have said one of their biggest inspirations was Tolkien and his writing.
You can pretty much Google any like large, especially large scale like fantasy or sci-fi franchises, and pretty much all of them credit Lord of the Rings. Like, even especially Star Wars, Anakin going from Anakin and then having his transformation into Darth Vader. Literally ripped straight from, and it you can literally read about this in like articles, but it was literally ripped straight from Smeagol turning into Gollum. It's that his whole story arc exactly the same as Smeagol.
No, I've never actually thought of that. That's interesting.
Because even when Smeagol becomes Gollum, he's sort of like, I mean, not exactly, but he helps the hobbits. He helps them bring them to like Mordor. Ultimately he ends up backstabbing them, but in the end Darth Vader fucking helps.
Spoilers. No.
Okay. Yeah, if you haven't seen Star Wars or Lord of the Rings yet, you're just, I don't know what to tell you, you're behind.
It's kind of weird. Yeah, God, that, like,
who hasn't watched Lord of the Rings?
There's people.
Yeah, I mean, thank
well okay
you
so
now.
Here's the thing, I'm glad you watched those movies, but it just seems odd to me that you like it never came up ever for you to watch, like, not necessarily as a kid maybe, but like just in general, like everyone I know, at least every guy I know I should say, has watched those movies at some point in time. Like, you don't necessarily need to be the biggest fan of it. Like, I would say like I've watched the movies, but I'm not like an avid fan in the same way like Carter, Joe, or Josh is, but like I know what they talk about, and like I've seen the movies to have like an understanding, but it just blows my mind that like you never watched it up until recently, just because of like how prevalent it is as a form of media. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I don't know. It was one of those series. I mean, there's a lot of like iconic franchises that I still need to watch, and I'm making.
Oh, and I'm sure to go like, through. But lots of people have gone through that. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that haven't necessarily seen all the Harry Potter movies, or have never seen like cult classics like Pulp Fiction, or you know what I mean. Like they've never seen these super culturally changing movies and or forms of media. So it's like you're not necessarily alone. I'm just very surprised that, like, given our friends group and how many people actually have watched and enjoy Lord of the Rings, that it's never come to you to watch until recently.
Yeah.
But like, good on you, obviously, for watching it now.
Which reminds me, sorry, really quickly, Stephen, because I know you said like this year you want to watch a whole lot more movies. Whenever you watch a movie, let us know, and then that way we can like ask you questions and like see what you thought when, you know, on a podcast. Because I know there's like some major movies that like.
All right, I'm gonna need you to watch all the Fast and Furious movies.
I should. Detail. I can do.
Honestly,
that.
Honestly, you should. Like, I'm not even.
I
like,
can do that.
I feel like, well, me personally, I watch Fast and Furious because I like looking at fun action scenes and fucking cars and, you know, there's hot girls mixed everywhere. You know, like it's just a whole blend of like mindless filmmaking. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say like you're not gonna get like, no one's watching a Fast and Furious film thinking like. The cinematography of this is so like next level, you know what I mean? Like no one's on that level. It's just like one of those films you watch just because it's like to watch, you know?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't expect much out of the films.
It's a fun film and series, but I will say, as much as like the story and plot isn't great, they've added some little like twists and stuff here and there where you're like, okay,
the more recent Fast and Furious movies have definitely they're definitely trying to flesh out their plot and world a little more.
Yeah.
I don't know if like
I've heard good things about 7.
Yeah, I like honestly, 7 and 8 are pretty solid. Not necessarily the action scenes, but like just the overall story. Like they start to flesh out more what's happened, and it's kind of cool to see.
Eight, I would say, is probably the cheesiest in terms of story because it feels a little forced, but
especially at the end.
Yeah,
this guy's outrunning a submarine.
What?
Man, some
it's
of
Vin
the action...
Diesel, man. Like, you got plot armor to the max.
All you need to know is that Vin Diesel literally turns into, like, Superman as long as he's screaming family. That's pretty much it.
But, like, mindless action and cheesy scenes aside, I feel like they've definitely begun to flesh out what the world is supposed to look like in those movies a little better, which is nice to see. Because it's like, if you really want a successful franchise, you gotta have a fleshed out world. You can't just have a one and done and then just like throw you into another one. Like the world's going to build on itself.
Yeah, I'll watch them. I mean, like my goal is like by the end of the year, watch 150 films. So
how do you feel about TV? I'm curious.
TV is a separate thing. Like,
okay. Because I personally, I want you to watch my all time favorite series in Futurama. But like, if you're going to focus on movies, I'm all for it. Like lots of movies that I've seen that I think you would really enjoy. Whether it be because of like the cinematography and stuff, or like the visual effects, or the actual story, I don't know. But
yeah
I think Carter's got a good idea.
Yeah, I'm still watching TV shows as I want to, but if I have like downtime, I'm watching movies. I'm just like trying to get through them. I think right now I've watched 10 movies, so I'm making decent pace.
Not bad.
On that note, now I don't know if anybody has another topic they want to discuss, because I know Matt and I sort of have to cut it short a little bit.
All good.
But on the note of TV, I know you've watched it, Steven. Matt, you got to watch WandaVision.
Okay, I'm very confused. Was Jeffrey just fucking with us and saying that it wasn't actually that fast? Or like,
no,
is it actually just not great?
So
I can see Jeffrey not liking
okay,
it.
Okay, so but is that because of how Jeffrey Marvel. Is, or is it like would you guys personally say it's a good watch?
Yeah.
So far I've enjoyed it. I think it's hard to say like I'm not going to say WandaVision is a good show just based off of two episodes, but so far I've enjoyed it. It is nothing like anything else that Marvel has done before. So, and it is a slow burn, so I can definitely see how someone who's generally a Marvel fan wouldn't like it. But I would say so far I've been enjoying it, and generally the reception has been very positive. So
Okay, good. Duly
so
noted.
I will say I like it because, like, whenever movies, especially like series, and you know there's gonna be more, whenever they allude to like something is happening and it's like building to something, I find that, like, you know, there's always like that cliffhanger, like, oh, damn, what's gonna happen, like, and you know it's mm-hmm. going to something. And I think especially by the end of episode two, they really, like, for the first episode is like pretty much purely like to set up the world. Mm-hmm. But by the end of episode two, it's like, you know, something's happening, and it's like they sort of tease a little bit of like
serious. How long shit. Is each episode?
Like 25 minutes,
half hour.
Yeah, okay, so they're not minutes. Whole hour episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And they just release every Friday at what, 1 a.m. here?
1 a.m. Yeah. Fucking bullshit. But yeah.
I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very surprised that someone of Marvel's caliber, with all the resources they have, they just don't release like at a certain time as like per time zone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah, I guess so.
Well, be like... I think it's to avoid spoilers.
Yeah.
Like, if you have somebody on the East Coast watching it 3 hours before someone on the West Coast, like, that kind of sucks. Everyone just has access to it at once.
Yeah. Or, like, I don't know. It seems that... I have, like, three different thoughts going on right now. I was gonna say... are they releasing out of, like, I'm assuming LA, that's why they're on the time zone, like Pacific Standard Time? Is that, like, technically where they're, like...
I never
like,
thought that, about that, but
is that why
Disney
they're releasing relative to that maybe. Time zone? Because a lot of things that release according to, like, Eastern Time, which is, like, New York, Toronto. Yeah, so it's, like, yeah. It makes sense because those are, like, hubs of, like, culture. Yeah, so it's, like, I'm assuming that's why, because they're on the West Coast. That's my guess, but...
I guess, but does it really matter? It's all digital, and, like, it just gets pre-uploaded before anyways?
No, I know it doesn't make a big difference. I'm just curious as to why they chose that time, like 12 a.m. Pacific Standard. Pacific, you know what I mean? Like it's a very unorthodox time weird. For something to come out.
Because when you think about like something like digital video games, they unlock, at least on PlayStation, they always unlock 12 a.m. Eastern. So like 10 p.m. our time. So I think the important thing is just like do a universal drop. Don't do midnight per time zone. I think as long as it's all at once, but... Yeah, it is interesting that they chose Pacific and not Eastern.
That's why. It's like I feel like most things that release drop on Eastern time. So no, I was just curious if you knew. But all right.
No, but that's a good guess.
Should we cut it there?
Yeah, I think. I mean, we covered a lot of ground.
We did cut a lot of ground.
I guess some closing notes. If you guys haven't realized yet, because I know we didn't really say it in the last episode, but we are... switching the podcast to like a bi-weekly thing, give ourselves a little bit more time to prepare, get topics, don't get burnt out, and I know obviously all of us have our own lives that we are busy with, so.
All right. Well, I feel like it was a good episode. We started with basketball and ended on WandaVision.
So. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. Honestly, you said it. And I didn't want to believe it because I was like, oh, well, there's so much content. But yeah, when you do a bi-weekly, there's so much stuff you have to catch up on that, like, it's like you have a focused topic, but, like, there's enough. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Anyways, thank you guys for listening or watching. Stay tuned for the next one. See you guys.
Yep.